The Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Mem Tes discusses how the Sanhedrin, or perhaps David HaMelech's agents, prosecuted Yoav, David's general, on three charges. The first charge was the murder of a general by the name of Avner ben Ner. And on this charge, Yoav was acquitted because he was deemed the Goel Hadam of his relative who had been murdered by Avner. The second charge was for the murder of Amasa ben Yeser, another general. And on this charge, it's less clear whether he was acquitted or not. In fact, it's machlokes. The exact details of this charge involved the following scenario. Amasa had been sent by David to rally a certain number of troops within 3 days. And Amasa delayed because he found those troops studying Torah, and you're not allowed to conscript or draft people into the army when they're engaged in a mitzvah such as Torah study. So therefore, he delayed until they finished studying so that he could draft them into the army, and consequently he disobeyed David HaMelech's command, because he was unwilling to fulfill that command when it would lead to the bittul of a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Yoav construed Amasa's negation of David's command as a merida, as a rebellion against the monarchy, and therefore he deemed that Amasa was chayiv misa, and he killed him. On the other hand, Amasa himself, and the Gemara and the Sanhedrin as well, believed that this was a fully justified disobedience, because the king's command is never supposed to be fulfilled when that will lead to the bittul of a mitzvah in the Torah. Tosfos is bothered. Tosfos says, how can it be that Yoav was convicted for his murder of Amasa, that Yoav was sentenced to death for that murder? Surely, at the very worst, Yoav was simply a shogeg, he was simply accidental in his murder. He believed that Amasa was chayv misa, whereas in reality Amasa was pater for misa. But if a person kills his fellow man under the mistaken belief that that man is chayv misa, he certainly is not considered a rotzeach b'mezid. He's not considered an intentional murderer, but rather he's considered a rotzeach b'shogeg, an unintentional murderer, and he's therefore not liable to capital punishment. So fractosos, how can it be that Yoav was convicted on this charge? And Tosfos' answer, essentially, is that you're right, Yoav was not convicted on this charge. Yoav was acquitted of this charge as well, because he was only a rotzeach b'shogeg, and what he was ultimately convicted of was a third charge, namely, that he himself had conspired against David HaMelech's monarchy. So Tosfos essentially claims that in this case of Amasa ben Yeser, Yoav was actually acquitted rather than convicted. In contrast, the Ar Sameach understands for the Rambam that Yoav was convicted of this second charge as well. However, he was not convicted under the ordinary law that governs murderers, namely the law which is upheld by the Sanhedrin, because that law certainly requires a very high degree of intentionality, which is evidenced by Hasra, by being warned, and by Eden, by two witnesses testifying that the convict or the defendant committed this murder after being warned within a specific time span, etc. So therefore, the Ar Sameach agrees to Tosfos' question, but he claims that there's an alternate, a parallel system of justice which does not have the same rigorous standards as that of the Sanhedrin. And this parallel system of justice is called Mishpat HaMelech, the justice of the king, the justice of the monarchy, the justice of the government. And this is a parallel system of justice to that of the Sanhedrin, and it has lower standards of intentionality. And Yoav was found wanting under those standards of Mishpat HaMelech, but the Torah gives the Melech authority to execute such justice, to execute murderers under this system of justice, even though such murder would not be liable under the system of justice that is executed and brought to the fore by the Sanhedrin. So this is what the Ar Sameach says for the Rambam. And you can actually find this in terms of the language of the Gemara. Our Girsa in the Gemara seems to waver back and forth between whether Yoav's defense is Amar Lehu, whether Yoav is presenting his defense to a large body of people, plural, he said to them, or whether it's Amar Le, whether Yoav is presenting his defense to one person, to the singular, namely to the agent of David HaMelech. If he's talking to a large body of people, So then it's Amar Luhu, it's he said to them, and that's referring to the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin is the one who's being dan him. The Sanhedrin is judging him. If it's Amar Lei, if he said to him, if Yoav is presenting his defense to a singular judge, so that's the agent of David HaMelech, that's been of Shlomo HaMelech, that's been a Yoav ben Yehoyada, and then he's being judged with the Mishpat HaMelech. And this also goes together with the previous sugya in terms of he ran to the Mizbeach because, you know, did he run to the Mizbeach because he wanted, you know, to live for a little bit longer, or did he run to the Mizbeach because that's where the Sanhedrin was, because he wanted specifically to present his case in the Sanhedrin rather than to have his case presented to the Melech. So all of this goes back to whether he's being judged in the din of Mishpat HaMelech or whether he's being judged in the din of Mishpat HaSanhedrin, Mishpat HaBeistin. Okay, so that's one issue. It could be argued, and the Ar Sameach may attempt to make this argument, that Tosfos really doesn't necessarily believe in this system of Mishpat HaMelech. The Rambam is a big chiddush when he says that the Melech is able to punish people and to execute people, to impose capital punishment and a death sentence on people with less evidence than the Sanhedrin. And in the absence of any such idea, on the part of other Rishonim, there's no need to assume that it does exist. I should note that this is separate from the concept of Morid B'Malchus. It's separate from the concept of rebellion. A king certainly has the right to execute people who rebel against him, but somebody who simply is a murderer, Yoav murdered Amasa, that's not a rebellion against David HaMelech, that's an ordinary murder without the proper standards of liability. So the Rambam says that even ordinary murders that in no way constitute a rebellion against the monarchy are within the authority of the king to suppress and to punish, and perhaps Tosfos would be of the opposite opinion. Good. The Drashus Haran, which is attributed to different authors, but the Drashus Haran basically, whoever the author was, it's a very important and well-accepted sefer, and he makes the following argument. He makes the argument that indeed there are these two forms of justice. There's Jewish justice, which is administered by the Sanhedrin, and there's Gentile justice, is justice which constitutes the dinim of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, the justice which even non-Jews are commanded to uphold. And those two standards of justice are very, very different. And namely, that the dinim of the Sanhedrin, the justice that's carried out by the Sanhedrin, is not designed necessarily to increase the social welfare and to deter criminals and to punish and to do all the other things that justice, the way that we understand it, or that contemporary secular lawyers and theorists of government and law understand it. Namely, that it's designed to make sure the society functions properly, but rather the justice of the Sanhedrin, says the Drashus Haran, is designed to fulfill a ritual requirement. The same way that shaking a lulav on Sukkot or eating a matzah on Pesach fulfills a ritual requirement, and what that does is it brings Hashem closer to Am Yisrael, it brings Hashem closer to this world, so too, says the Ran, however much the system of Sanhedrin's justice appears to be designed to maintain a certain social order, in reality, it is no less of a ritual mitzvah than that of shaking a lulav or of eating a matzah. Its sole purpose is to bring the Shechinah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu closer to us, and it does so not by creating a just and lawful society. It does so in the same inexplicable way as the mitzvah of matzah, the mitzvah of lulav. This is the argument of Chidushi Haran. However, the Drashus Haran, argues that it's still necessary for there to be a lawful society, and for that reason, amongst Goyim, there's a mitzvah of dinim by the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, and that's in order to institute a lawful society, which is why the standards of liability, there's less need for Hasra, there's less need for Eidos, and that's designed to create a lawful society. Zok the Drashus Haran, that also is the position of a melech amongst Klal Yisrael. Basically, the Drashus Haran takes the position of the Rambam that there's such a thing as Mishpat HaMelech, that Mishpat HaMelech parallels the mitzvah of dinim and the halachos of dinim that are found by the Bnei Noach. So in other words, the Drashus Haran is taking the position of the Rambam, and he argues that over all matters of creating a lawful society, the melech has authority to institute punishments and laws. This is the position of the Drashus Haran. The Ar Sameach actually suggests, however, that this position is limited to areas which perhaps we'll name civil laws, meaning the Melech has authority to institute laws and to create punishments in those areas where it relates to making sure that society remains lawful. So the melech is not allowed to deliver extra legal punishments, let's say, for Chilul Shabbos. Because Chilul Shabbos is not a matter, at least for the Arsameach, it's not a matter of creating a lawful society. That's a matter of being Adam Lamakum. It's a matter of making sure that people follow the proper religious standards. And therefore, even though the Sanhedrin have the authority to punish people who are Mechal HaShabbos even beyond the letter of the law, that authority is vested in the Sanhedrin, whereas the Melech only has authority to give extra legal punishments in areas where it'll maintain the lawful existence of society. This is a position that the Ars HaMeach attributes to the Rambam, which is essentially a compromise position. It says that the Sanhedrin has a power to give extra legal authority, to give extra legal punishments in any sphere of halacha, whereas the Melech has authority to give extra legal punishments in the lawful society range of halacha. The Joshua Saran does not take this position. This is the position the Ars HaMeach gives for the Rambam. The Joshua Saran says that when the Sanhedrin are around, they have a monopoly on extra legal authority, with the exception of extra legal cases where the Melech himself is the perpetrator, which the Sanhedrin have authority over. But extra legal punishments on the rest of the rest of the citizens of Klal Yisrael, so that's purely in the hands of the Melech, because the Sanhedrin is purely a ritual body. It's designed through their mishpat to bring a Kaddish Baruch Hu closer to us, not to create a lawful society. So therefore, says the Drash Saran, the Sanhedrin does not have the authority whenever there's a Melech on Klal Yisrael. The Sanhedrin has no authority to give extra legal punishments whatsoever. The Rambam says that the Sanhedrin has such authority, just that authority is also given to the Melech under some circumstances. And then third position the Ars HaMeach brings down from Rashi, B'shem the Yerushalmi, that no, the Melech, like the Sanhedrin, has the power to give extra legal punishments in all areas, not only in areas that pertain to creating a lawful society, but also in areas that pertain to Bein Adam Lamakum, to creating a spiritually sound society. So, without discussing a little bit more, just a quick summary and conceptual overview, it seems that there's a discussion about the scope of authority of king vis-a-vis the Sanhedrin to issue extra legal punishments, where we have on the one hand the position of the Drashus Haran that the authority is solely vested in the king, and the Sanhedrin only gets it when there's no king. On the opposite extreme, we seem to have the opinion of Rashi, who says that the authority is invested equally in the king and in the Sanhedrin. And then we have a compromise position, which is perhaps that of the Rambam, which is that extra legal authority is vested fully in the Sanhedrin, but in the Melech only for purposes of maintaining a lawful society. And then there may be the position of Tosfos, who says that the king actually has no extra legal authority whatsoever, which is why the king had no right to punish Yoav ben Tzeruya, and it was only the Sanhedrin who had the right to punish him, unless Yoav was a Mori de Malchus. And there's basically two ways that one can explain it. One could be the scope. In other words, does a Melech have a responsibility or authority to do things that outside of the corpus of halacha to maintain a lawful society or not? Does the Sanhedrin have that power or not? And at the same time, can we perhaps distinguish or differentiate between the Melech and the Sanhedrin in terms of overseeing a lawful society when it comes to Bein Adam Lachavero versus when it comes to Bein Adam Lamakom, which would perhaps be the position of the Rambam? But a second way that one can look at this also is similar to the way that we analyzed the halacha of Goel Hadam earlier, namely, do we view the Melech in terms of Mori B'Malchus, or in terms of punishing people who are lawless and who are contributing to the deterioration of society, is a Melech, when he's punishing those people, an agent of the Sanhedrin alone, or is he a direct agent of God? Is he an independent minister of justice, independent of the Sanhedrin? And that could have different consequences, both in terms of the machlokas that we analyzed earlier, as well as in another machlokas, which is whether the Sanhedrin has the authority to judge people who are Mori B'Malchus, or whether the Sanhedrin has no such authority, also will tell us about the relationship between, which is, by the way, discussion in the machlokas between the Yad Ramah and Rashi on our Amud, that also relates to the question of how independent is the Melech from the Sanhedrin. Do they have totally independent and non-intersecting roles? Do their roles to some extent intersect? And if the roles intersect, do we view that as being that one of them is functioning as the agent of the other? The Drasha Saran says certainly it all belongs to the Melech. If the Sanhedrin does it, it's only as an agent of the Melech. And others might say then no, that maybe the Sanhedrin has full authority. The Melech can only do what little he can do in terms of extra legal punishment as an agent of the Sanhedrin. Or perhaps the fact that they have two totally, independent authority to give extra legal punishments might indicate that they're two totally separate entities. So I just basically, again, we have this four-way machlokas about the authority of the Melech and the Sanhedrin to give extra legal punishment, and that may depend on the scope of the Melech and the Sanhedrin's responsibility in terms of Ruchnius and Gashmius, and it could also have to do with the independence that we can impute to the Malchus and to the Sanhedrin.